We'll proceed to the fourth case of the day, Johnson v. ExxonMobil.
May it please the court, counsel. For the record, my name is Benjamin Woye, and I represent Mr. Gordon Johnson. And we respectfully ask the court to reverse the ruling of the court below, granting defendant and appellee here ExxonMobil's motion for partial summary judgment with respect to Mr. Gordon's ADA claim. We also ask the court to reverse the district court decision granting summary judgment sua sponte on the very date of trial to the defendant and appellee ExxonMobil. Briefly stated, Your Honors, this case involved a wrongful discharge claim based on discrimination, based on ADA and age discrimination claim. The issues in this case is embedded on the procedural history. When this case first came to the court, Mr. Johnson filed it under ADA and ADEA, claiming that he had worked for ExxonMobil for 28 and a half years, and just about before his retirement, he was discharged for allegedly misusing a corporate credit card. Ms. Johnson claimed that other individuals who were younger employees and also non-disabled also abused the American Express corporate card and were not discharged. At the conclusion of discovery, ExxonMobil filed a motion for summary judgment, claiming that, in part, that Mr. Johnson cannot prove that he was disabled, even though he suffered from epilepsy. ExxonMobil also claims that Johnson cannot prevail on the ADEA claim because of the fact that some of the individuals were not more than 10 years younger than him. When Mr. Johnson responded to the brief, there's no fact concerning Cleveland was raised by the defendant. Now, in their reply, for the first time, they raised the issue of Cleveland, claiming that Mr. Johnson had in fact filed a petition for SSDI claim before the Social Security Administration. Based on that fact, the district court ordered that a sole reply be addressed by Johnson, explaining the reason why the apparent conflict between his claim that he was disabled in ADA claim could stand his claim that he at the same time that he was entitled to disability claim. Mr. Johnson in fact fulfilled that particular request by the court, and the court denied for the first time ExxonMobil's motion for summary judgment with respect to the ADA claim and the ADEA claim. The court scheduled trial for January 26, 2004. However, on November 1803, defendant filed a motion for partial reconsideration on the issue of the ADA claim. Defendants claimed that somehow that by that time that Mr. Johnson had been approved for SSDI benefit based on the petition he filed on March 5th, 2003, alleging that he was in fact disabled on the very date that he was discharged. We responded to that motion and in fact addressed to the court, explained to the court that the inconsistency is number one. Immediately Mr. Johnson was discharged, his condition worsened. He contacted his Social Security lawyer who drafted a petition for him, which in fact he signed. In that petition, he agreed that on the very date that he was discharged, he was unable to work. Now, apparently, that was an apparent mistake, and those was also addressed to the district court. However, the district court granted a motion for partial judgment and then allowed the ADEA claim to go forward. On January 8, 2004, the very date we are having the pretrial, the final pretrial conference.
What was the Social Security claim ever amended to change the date of his disability?
It was never amended when it was brought to the attention.
Never was brought to the attention of Social Security. Social Security always assumed, based on his statements, that he was disabled as of the date that turned out to be the date of his termination.
That is correct, Your Honor. I agree. But when you look at the issue in Cleveland, they said that even if that was the case, that those could stand, and all he needed to do before the district court was to explain the apparent inconsistency. And we submit to the court that Mr. Johnson did, in fact, explain to the court what the apparent inconsistency was, one of which being that he didn't apply for it until almost a year after his discharge. When compared to the plaintiff in Cleveland, she was, in fact, employed and at the same time applied for the SSDI claimed and was approved. In this case, Johnson had left employment for almost a year when he filed the petition, which in the first instance was denied and subsequently approved. Although the case went on, was prepared to be tried on the ADEA claim, on the very morning of the pretrial conference, the defendant armed itself with another motion for summary judgment with respect to the ADEA claim. Attached to the appendix is the court ruling on that. I brought to the court's attention that the morning of final pretrial conference was not the proper moment to file another motion for summary judgment. The court denied that motion and again ordered all parties to appear on January 23rd, 03 for jury instruction conference. Again, on jury instruction conference, the defense again raised yet another issue regarding the ADEA claim for the first time. Now, the court recognizes that defendants have become a moving target. For the first time, they stated that because the court had granted its motion for summary judgment based on the contradictions on the SSDI application and the ADA claim, that Johnson cannot make a prima facie case with respect to the ADA claim. Again, I brought that to the attention of the court. We are on a very final jury instruction conference. We're supposed to start trial on Monday. This was a Friday. The court then orders the defendant to give it a submission, additional authorities supporting its position. And that discussion, again, was held off record, so that it doesn't have to be in a brief, but you could just write a submission, and I will look into it. There was no notice to Mr. Johnson that the trial would not be proceeding. There was no notice to myself that I was supposed to submit any further written. As far as I was concerned, Mr. Johnson was concerned, we were supposed to have trial on Monday. At this time, I had my witnesses ready. On the morning of Monday, January 26th, I answered, ready for trial, had witnesses ready, and the court, for the first time, announced that it has reviewed the submission made by the defense and has now taken the position that Mr. Johnson could not make a prima facie case of ADA claim and therefore would grant a summary judgment sui sponte with respect to the ADA claim. We submit to this court that was a denial of due process. Mr. Johnson had no notice nor adequate opportunity to respond to the submission which the defendant and here the appellee made to the court. Had that opportunity been given, would I have been able to once again explain to the court that the apparent inconsistency was a mistake, and the ruling in Cleveland adequately stated that you could have an ADA claim at the same time have an SSDI claim. Your Honors, I see my time is running. I have some moment reserved.
Thank you, Mr. Woye. Mr. Chambers?
May it please the court, counsel, good morning, Your Honors. For the defendant appellee, ExxonMobil, Robert Chemers from Pretzel and Stauffer, my associate, Mark Ratner. Your Honors, I was confused when I read the plaintiff's brief of appellant. I was confused after we filed our brief and I didn't get a reply, thinking maybe he agreed with me. I'm confused after I listened to his argument. Contrary to anything this court heard, there was no trial by ambush in front of Judge St. Eve in the district court. In fact, if you read the transcript of the January 26, 2004 proceedings before the district court, counsel for the plaintiff was there. After the preliminary good mornings, how are you, Your Honor, were addressed, counsel was asked by the trial judge, the district court, what evidence do you have to explain the inconsistencies between the SSDI application and your client's claim? Counsel for the plaintiff answered and basically said it's the same as before with respect to the ADA claim, as to which the district court entered summary judgment for ExxonMobil about 3 weeks earlier. So the judge confirmed that the plaintiff had nothing new, different, or more interesting to say or to offer as evidence. And the judge then points to defense counsel and says, you've been a moving target, but you sent me cases, which I asked for, said the district court, to which plaintiff's counsel didn't respond, to which plaintiff's counsel doesn't even address in his brief of appellant in this court. In other words, he stood there, didn't object, didn't ask for more time, didn't discuss the case, didn't even attempt to interrupt the court. The court asked him a question, he answered it, she ruled, and he thanked the court and sat down. He comes to this court and says, boy, denial of due process. Well, that wasn't raised in the district court. You can't raise a constitutional issue for the first time on appeal. That goes without saying. What he says is he argues lack of notice, lack of an opportunity. What he just told the court was what occurred. November 18, 2003, a ruling after briefing on December 30, 2003, a hearing on January 8, 2004, where this issue was discussed, another hearing January 23, 2004, where the issue was discussed, and a request was made by the district court to defense counsel, give me more case law on what you've just said. Defense counsel did. In this court, there is no argument, there should be no argument, valid argument, about lack of opportunity or lack of notice. They've been waived. Even if they weren't waived, even if he didn't have this opportunity, he doesn't tell this court why the district court erred in entering summary judgment for ExxonMobil on the ADEA count. He doesn't contest, he doesn't discuss, he doesn't even mention the case law which counsel for Exxon submitted to the district court on January 23, which the district court referred to when it ruled on January 26th. They're not in the brief. They're not discussed. So this court, were it even considering a remand on the ADEA count, would be sending it back for what the district court described as an exercise in futility, because the plaintiff doesn't take issue with the propriety of the summary judgment, only with how the district court got there. However, how the district court got there has been waived. There was no confusion. There was no surprise. This wasn't like what Judge Evans wrote on behalf of a court in Osler 2 years ago, where he said for the court that sua sponte summary judgment is permissible, but it's a hazardous procedure. In other words, the losing party needs to know that the axe is up there and it's about to fall. Well, you heard from plaintiff's counsel, November 18.03, December 30.03, January 8.04, January 23.04, January 26.04. He knew it was coming. He couldn't possibly have not had he been representing his client. The explanation he gave, he talked about Cleveland. Cleveland says you have to give a sufficient explanation, whereas here you file a lawsuit saying, I'm a 50-year-old epileptic, and I was fired, rather than I was fired for misusing a corporate credit card. Well, as to being 50 years old, the age discrimination, ADEA claim, one of the elements, as this court well knows, is the ability of the plaintiff to work to the reasonable expectations of his employer. As to the ADA claim, the epilepsy disability claim, it's I can work with or without reasonable accommodations. However, a year after he files the lawsuit, a year after he's fired, he seeks SSDI benefits and says, I can't work, and I could not work as of March 14, 2002, the date I was fired. Now, tells the SSA, and with respect to benefits, I can't work. He gets benefits. He doesn't give them back. He can't work as of the date he's fired. But he tells the district court, I can work. With respect to the S, and then the district judge, what's the explanation? Well, I filed that, my client filed that a year later. Well, that's a disavowal. It's not an explanation. I can work, but the SSA was told I can't work. Again, it's a disavowal. He then tells the district court, the form wasn't filled out by my client, but he signed it. Well, not only did he sign it, he attested to the veracity of those statements. The SSA made a determination the man was entitled to benefits based on a sworn representation. I cannot work, and I could not work as of March 14, 2002, which he says in May of 2003. Benefits are first denied. It's appealed. It's reconsidered. Then he gets them retroactive to the date he said was the last date he could work. Did he bring that explanation, that mistake, to the attention of the SSA, give back the benefits he arguably is not entitled to? Well, certainly not. And under Cleveland, that's not a sufficient explanation. You have a missing element of a prima facie case for both discrimination claims. As to the ADA claim, summary judgment was eminently proper. This court should affirm on a de novo standard. As to the ADA claim, there was no trial by ambush. The issues with respect to that claim have been waived with respect to notice and opportunity to be heard. If they're not waived, there was no abuse of discretion. The judgment should be affirmed because the plaintiff did not tell the district court how he could prove the case in the light of that sworn admission to the Social Security Administration, and he hasn't explained to this court what he could possibly do if the case were sent back that would be different. And for those reasons, I respectfully ask this court to affirm. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Woolley?
Yes, sir. May it please the court. I'll address two issues that police counsel raised. One was the letter of January 23 of 2004. I have submitted that letter as part of appellant's appendix. In that letter, you see when it was faxed. It was sometime after 5 o'clock in the evening. Now, that is significant. So to suggest to you that somehow I had the opportunity to respond or that I was required to respond to any type of authority cited is plainly wrong, an inaccurate reflection of what the fact stands. No lawyer would be in their office preparing for trial, subpoenaing witnesses, knowing that it was required to be writing briefs regarding some element of his claim that would be disposed of in the morning of the trial. When in fact, the final jury instruction conference, Her Honor, Honorable Judge St. Eve instructed all the parties to be ready at 9:15. I see that my time is up.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.